When I was 3 years old, my parents put me into preschool. I actually didn't like it. I think I was a terrible child. I ended up kicked out 3 times from 3 different preschools.
For 4 glorious years of writing musical parodies and skits and things, I got to live my dream, basically, of living life in a musical.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I am Jessica Henkin.
And I'm Laura Wexler.
And this week's episode is In My Other Life. 2 stories about women who kept the music alive while pursuing decidedly non-musical careers. So this first story is from Erica, who moved here to Baltimore from Japan to pursue her medical degree and graduate studies. And she shared this story recently at an event that we had at Johns Hopkins. Take a listen.
When I was 3 years old, my parents put me into preschool. I actually didn't like it. I think I was a terrible child. I ended up kicked out 3 times from 3 different preschools. My parents were still determined that I should go to preschool, so they put me to another one. I still refused to go. And then one day, out of blue, I told my parents, hey, I want to learn how to play the violin. None of my family members play any music instruments, and they didn't even know how I learned the word violin because I don't go to preschool. But then they thought it would be a perfect reason to put me back to preschool. So they said, well, if you go to preschool, then we will find you a music teacher. This is how I started playing the violin. Since then, for the past 25 years, I've been a violinist. Playing music, especially violin, helped me to make friends, open new doors, and entered me to the new world. Growing up, playing the violin was very exciting. I grew up in a very small village in Japan, and I was the only child who played the violin that time. So I had a lot of chance to perform in front of people since I was very young. I played at nursing homes, local festivals, restaurants, and schools. I really like it at first because I get to wear a pretty dress and also I get a flower after the performance. But it also helped me to learn about the discipline and the importance of continuing to work hard. I used to practice 2 to 3 hours every single day since I started. I also tried multiple music competitions as well as joining the youth orchestra. But nothing prepared for me to the day that changed my life. On March 11, 2011, Japan experienced a huge earthquake and tsunami in Tohoku area, which is 300 miles away from Tokyo. The earthquake is now known as the Great East Japan Earthquake. You may not be familiar with the word, but this was the earthquake that was the reason for the Fukushima nuclear power plant crisis. I lived far away from Tohoku at that time. I was in 7th grade, and I saw what happened on TV. I saw how humans have no power in front of nature, and I saw tsunami wiping away the lives and houses from people. I was at the youth orchestra at that time, and the maestro, who was a conductor at the same time, Maestro Yutaka Sato, who is said to be one of the last apprentices of the conducting legend Leonard Bernstein from US, decided to bring children to the refugee areas and bring to have a concert tour to bring comfort and peace. So 4 months later, after the earthquake, I arrived at Tohoku for the first time in my life. I remember clearly how quiet the airport was. On the way to the place we are supposed to play the violin, I saw a pile of ripples, and there was not a single building left because tsunami wiped everything away. I was in desperate need of understanding what happened. I thought I was prepared to see this, but I wasn't. I really wanted to escape from this scene, and I wanted to escape from the harsh reality. Our first destination was called Nebaba Beach. The beach was affected by tsunami and took 2,000 lives of people. We started playing facing the ocean and played for those who will never come back from the ocean. We didn't have a lot of audience. Only 10 to 15 local people gathered, and I heard people weeping as I played. After the performance, people continued to say thank you and thank you. I felt guilt because I didn't bring anything. I didn't bring food, I didn't bring water, any supplies that was in desperate need at that time. But then one lady told me, the sorrow was too great, but we have to move forward. I lost my son, but we still have to keep living. And to do that, we really needed music. We received supplies every week, but we never received music before this. That was the first time that I learned music have that kind of power. Since then, I had a chance to engage in multiple charity concerts and also the fundraising event. I was delighted to learn that the fund we raised was able to purchase new instruments for local kids who lost their instruments because of tsunami. The next year, when we went back to perform again, the local kids actually played for us. It was not the most sophisticated note that I've ever heard, but I thought it's like this, it was a strong and powerful step forward. Since then, for the past 13 years, I have engaged in fundraising events as a violinist, as a concert manager, as a fundraiser, and as a medical professional. We were invited by Notre Dame de Paris and also UNESCO headquarters, which is also in Paris, to perform for the mass that is dedicated for those who lost their lives because of tsunami. We were able to raise more than $10 million in total as a fund, and the fund is still keeping helping people. I thought this is my calling. I thought, well, I want to do this for my entire life, to bring peace and comfort and heal people. I thought about becoming a violinist. Well, my parents were not very happy about that, but then I decided to go to medical school. I chose the career in medicine because I learned that healing has many languages, and healthcare and medicine is one of the languages. During my medical school and residency, I kept researching about how music therapy can support and increase the quality of life and well-being of people who are suffering from dementia and cognitive dysfunction. After graduation, I started residency. But then after working a couple of years, I realized that the impact I have making to the patients or the people is not the impact that I really wanted to make. That is why I decided to come here to pursue MPH and MBA. Now, at Bloomberg School of Public Health, I do research about mental health of children who have been affected by climate-related disasters, and I still play the violin. I'm happy to share that I am assistant concertmaster at Hopkins Symphony Orchestra, and I'm also serving as a board member. Thank you. My future is very vague, but I'm determined that I have to move forward, note by note, step by step. I'm determined that I will keep helping people and contribute to bring comfort to those who are in the most vulnerable of their lives. Thank you.
So much about Erica is so endearing and so charming. I love that she starts her story basically saying, I was a terrible, like, pre-kindergarten student, and I just kept on getting in trouble and getting kicked out until I discovered the violin. And it opened up all these paths for her. And yeah, the moment that she talks about playing for the survivors of the Fukushima
reactor meltdown,
is it's just such a beautiful moment. And she attributes being able to have an experience like that as a human being to just learning music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
Are you still teaching yourself piano?
Yeah, I am.
That's awesome.
As much as I can with my perimenopausal brain. It's like the sad, there's like no myelination. Is that what you call, like, it's just all, my brain's so slow. But around Christmas time, I played a lot of little ditties for myself.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice.
Good King Wenceslas is an old favorite.
Yeah. All right, we will be back in a few minutes with another story from the Stoop.
So this next story is short and sweet. This was someone who, she shared an audience story. So at Stoop shows, we have, it can be like people that we worked with, it's curated, or you just show up the night of, liquid courage, put your name in, it gets drawn, and you share a story. So that's the case for Laura Capelli. Take a listen, and we'll dissect afterward.
So as long as I can remember, I've kind of wished to live life in a musical. And this might seem like an odd thing, but it was kind of normal in the Capelli household. My dad, though very masculine, has admitted to loving show tunes. And from a very young age, we were going to see the latest Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I guess Cats to a 9-year-old is really cool. But anyway, I grew up just really loving this, but getting sidetracked. And finally, when I got to college, I see these flyers, auditions, all-female musical sketch comedy troupe, which you're thinking, like, how can that exist? I mean, that's a pretty random thing. But I went and on a whim decided to try out. I had never sang in front of people before, never done anything musical. And somehow, like through butchering Lean on Me, they let me in the group. And great audition song, by the way, especially when you kind of suck at rhythm by me. Lean on me. See that? It's a miracle. It's a miracle. But somehow, in spite of my spasticness, they let me in this group. And for four glorious years of writing musical parodies and skits and things, I got to live my dream, basically, of living life in a musical. And but unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. And college did, and I moved here to start medical school. And I don't know if you guys know much about medical school, but it's not really a musical-friendly place. people are sick, people are dying. I mean, besides rent, no one really goes there with musicals. So I was pretty bummed out. I was pretty bummed out for a while. But then I remember the whole time in my life where I was just happy with, like, cheesy, I know, but the music inside. Like, my life could be a musical and no one would necessarily have to know about it. So now, if you ever see a girl in business casual attire and a white coat walking down Calvert Street in the morning, kind of skipping to herself, you know, enjoying the great mornings of our lovely city, you know what I'm singing in my head.
How would you feel if you found out that your doctor was super into musicals, specifically had done a musical improv experience in college? Like, would that...
Yes.
That would be a plus, right?
For sure.
Yeah. Well, if she's your MD, then...
Don't you remember we had the... who was the orthopedic surgeon who helped heal the foot of the Foo Fighters guy and then got on stage with them?
Oh, that's right. Remember? Yeah.
Shoot, I can't remember his name. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think I just am fascinated with any sort of other life people
right.
have. Like, you think they're so consumed by this one thing that is their profession, and then they have this completely other life
yeah.
that's often, like, not at all related.
It's interesting, though, because I mean, there are many lawyers that do things like acting or improv, but doctors, it does seem all-consuming. To be a physician in America, it seems like you don't get a lot of time to, like,
yeah.
pursue. But both of these women, they kept the music alive.
And we're here keeping the stories alive on The Stoop. Thank you all for listening today. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. You can visit us at stoopstorytelling.com to find out about upcoming shows and listen to all of our past stories. And we will see you back soon with more stories from The Stoop.